From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. Idaho has a long history with racial injustice. One of many examples was discriminatory housing practices with racial covenants and redlining. And this practice, well, it was not unique to Idaho. This language was widespread in the United States, with massive subdivisions being built following World War II, excluding non-white buyers. Now, during this year's legislative session here in Idaho, Senator Melissa Wintrow brought legislation to change this language. And as of July 1st, Idaho homeowners can now ask for that language to be removed from their property deeds. So joining us today to talk more about this, as well as the history behind racial covenants, are Senator Wintrow, McKay Cunningham, a professor at the College of Idaho. I want to welcome both of you to the program today.
Thank you for having us.
Really happy to be here, Gemma.
Well, I'm so glad to have both of you here. So, Professor Cunningham, I'd like to start with you. Let's get folks maybe a little background on this. Can you start by just the basics of what racial covenants and redlining were?
Sure. During the 1930s, in the wake of the Great Depression, the federal government and policymakers up in Washington, D.C. were looking for a way to stabilize the economy, which was in so much turmoil. And one of the best ways they thought of doing so was to increase homeownership, particularly with regard to middle class and lower income families across the country. And so they created all these financial incentives. They created a federal agency to administer these financial incentives. And then they went out throughout the United States and created these colored maps. These colored maps were to determine where these financial incentives were to be given out, if you will. And the green areas in these maps were deemed the best. And those were where the government would front 90 up to 100% of the loan in order for people to enter the homeowners market that otherwise could not do so. They didn't have today's equivalent of $350,000 sitting underneath the couch, but with the government's backing, they could enter the homeowners market. Now, these maps also included red areas, thus redlining. And if you happen to live in a neighborhood where people of color also lived, that was deemed hazardous. It was redlined. This effectively boxed out large portions of people of color from the homeowners market during that post-Depression housing boom. Now, the private sector followed suit. They saw what the public sector and the government was doing overtly, and they did the same thing, but through race covenants. Race covenants were just when developers would develop large swaths of lands for residential purposes, and they would put a covenant on each property in that neighborhood. And the covenant essentially said that only white people can live here. No persons of color can live here unless they are a domestic servant. And these two policies, redlining and race covenants, served to box out people of color from the homeowner market, which is one of the central ways that any middle and low income family can generate wealth to pass it on to their children.
Right. And so, Professor, you decided one day to look at an interactive map in Ada and Canyon counties. And what did you find on that map?
Yeah, there's a fantastic interactive map done by the University of Richmond. And when you look at it, it shows all of the redlining that occurred across the United States. And it's fascinating. You see how pervasive the federal government was in redlining. But then you get to Idaho and it's blank. And that got us at the College of Idaho thinking, like, that can't be the case. Like, certainly there was redlining that occurred in Idaho. And that's kind of what spurred our research. And thankfully, Senator Wintrow was already two steps ahead of us and had been working on a proposed law that dealt with race covenants. And we just happened to join forces.
So I do want to get back, Professor, to this project that you started with students at the College of Idaho. But Senator, I want to bring you into the conversation because, as Professor Cunningham said, you were looking into this because these racial covenants had been brought to your attention by a constituent.
Yeah, you know, Ed can't be here today, but he is one of the constituents that lives in the Warm Springs, Mesa area in my district. And when they were purchasing the home, saw this language, you know, only white folks can live here. And as he said, even in his testimony in the legislature, it just sent a chill down his spine. And And, you know, how could he live here if it said this? And he, like many others, reached out to Zoanne Olson, who you're going to hear from at the Idaho Fair Housing Council. She gets these calls quite frequently saying, what in the world is this language and where am I moving? And, you know, she, to her credit, you know, basically called a meeting and got stakeholders together, invited me along. And we just started examining what is the way and how do we address this? So folks like Ed don't have to have a shiver go down their spine and really have that kind of reaction, because racism is trauma. And you right. can imagine the psychological and physical trauma that people go through, you know, reading that and then questioning, can I live here? And quite frankly, after the law was, you know, after legislation passed the first chamber, I got a phone call from a man. He said he was a Black man. And he said, thank you so much for doing this. I was looking at a house and I saw this and I just really questioned. So I'm just so thankful this group of stakeholders got together when we did. And we worked over the course of a year and a half, 2 years to do this.
And Senator, you know, let's talk a little bit about this, because I do think that most people, at least white people, probably did not know that there were these racial covenants in property deeds. And even if they did happen to glance at all of the paperwork when you're signing your all of the papers that you sign when you buy property, right. You know, you probably assumed, well, that's, you know, that's not being enforced anymore, right? And I think it's a lack of knowledge and maybe a lack of understanding at how racism is systemic. And right. This is an example of that.
Absolutely, Gemma. You know, the legislation not only helps remove a barrier, but it also educates. It shines a light on how racism gets incorporated into systems. So we, like you noted, white people were taught that racism is really an individual act of meanness, right? And so that's mm-hmm. why a lot of white folks say, well, I'm not racist because I didn't actively do something. I didn't seek someone out. I didn't harm them. I didn't say something, right? However, when we incorporate racist attitudes, values, beliefs into law, we're then creating a system of discrimination that doesn't take someone acting out, right? Doesn't, rather, it merely means that you participate in a system and gain benefits even without consciously knowing it. So whether a white person knows it or not, they were now participating in a system that gave them advantage and disadvantaged people of color. And I think that's essential that this law shines a light on the fact that the U.S. government, state governments, actively deprived people of color access to the American dream. And that's had long lasting effects over generations. Property right. is how fast, you know, wealth along and people get ahead. So it doesn't necessarily erase those decades or centuries of discrimination, but it finally acknowledges that, hey, the state played a part in this, private businesses played a part in this, and we need to address it, denounce it moving forward, and do better. And I think it's very telling that this legislature voted unanimously in favor of addressing systemic racism. So when we have the misinformation deluge of CRT and critical race theory, this is the example of the perfect use of critical race theory. We have identified how we have incorporated intentionally racism into law and denied people access to wealth. That's the example. And so I hope that helps people understand what we're talking about instead of myth and specter in our education system that's meant to divert our attention really from the true problem.
And Professor Cunningham, you know, you and a group of students started the what you're calling the redlining project at the College of Idaho. And what these students found is there were more than 50 subdivisions just in Ada County that had these racial covenants. And we should note, if my understanding is correct on this, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that these were private entities that were putting these in place, because as you mentioned, that map was, that interactive map didn't show anything in the state of Idaho.
That's exactly right. We were a little shocked at the pervasiveness of the racial covenants in Ada County. And you are correct, over 50 subdivisions, many of these subdivisions having more than 200 properties within them. So we're talking about thousands of properties that to this day still retain these racial covenants. They attach to the land. such that even if the racial covenant was created by private entities in the 1940s, those initial buyer and seller of that property, doesn't matter that they are dead or that they have transferred that property to someone else, the racial covenant sticks with the property itself. And so a lot of people have no idea that they are living in a neighborhood or a subdivision that still has racial covenants. And that was part of the genesis of the idea for the Red Line Project at the College of Idaho. We wanted to do a couple of things. One, to educate, just as Senator Wintrow was talking about with regard to the systemic nature of racism as it relates to housing, but also to help Idahoans on their own to do something about it. We're hoping to create an interactive map where Idahoans can just type in their address and it will pop up and they will be able to determine whether or not they happen to live in one of these subdivisions with a racial covenant, and then go from there to the law that Senator Wintrow spearheaded and file that modification document.
Right. And I think your students put a video together who have worked on this project. And I found it very compelling, Professor, because, you know, one of the things that one of the students said was, these are places that I grew up in, that I never knew that these covenants were in place. And it goes to show, you know, where we end up living generationally has been based on these maps, this redlining. And then you go into this idea of generational wealth or the lack thereof, right? I mean, as the senator said, white Americans have been able to amass wealth because of what happened post-World War II to get families into homes.
Yeah, I really like the point that you made with regard to one of our students who is a Boise native, and him saying that, hey, I had no idea that half the places that I know around town still have these racial covenants attached to them. It reminds me of the fact that when we first started to try to get the legislature to pass this law, it got garnered some media, and some folks in the Collister neighborhoods, they reached out to the senator and myself and Dr. Jill Gill at BSU, and they said, come talk to us, because we had no idea. And it's that kind of outreach and education that I think is really one of the most important parts of this law. Mm-hmm.
Joining us for this segment, Zoe Ann Nelson, director of the Idaho Fair Housing Council. We're looking at the history of racial covenants and redlining here in Idaho. So, Senator, tell us about Senate Bill 1240. You touched on it a little bit in the first segment, but how you work to get this legislation passed, and we should note, unanimously passed.
Yeah, I'm just going to do that briefly, but Zoe Ann called a meeting, like I said, and I can't remember. I mean, it was during COVID, so our Zoom screen was filled with stakeholders discussing really how to go about this. And as you know, the dirt's always in the details. And when it comes to property deeds, as McKay was saying, you can't just erase something, right? There's got to be a process mm-hmm. to make sure it happens. So basically what we started with is we agreed, hey, let's do a modification document to at least nullify it. So when somebody sees it, they know it is null and void, that because Zoe Ann is going to talk about the calls she gets. But there are other states right now who are actually removing the language altogether and mandating the state do it. But I think this is a good first step to let property owners identify and at free of charge now can go down to their county clerk's office and take care of this.
So, Ann, talk to us then about some of the calls and inquiries you were getting even before this legislation was passed.
I mean, I would say we at least get, you know, between 10, sometimes 20 calls a year from homeowners, realtors, you know, sometimes tenants who see these racial covenants in their deeds and CC&Rs, and, you know, they're shocked. They're like, this day and age, I can't believe this language is in there. I think the most shocking is people, either the realtors are afraid to sell the homes or buy the homes because they're thinking they're going to get a fair housing complaint. And then, you know, certainly people think, oh my goodness, I'm going to be in violation of this covenant, or I can't buy my home because the home that I've been pursuing, because, you know, I'm banned from being there. And, you know, we've had to work with people to let them know, you know, the title company strikes them, but there is no enforcement mechanism in the state of Idaho. And that really was what precipitated it, is that we just got so many calls. And, you know, I just want to say thank you to the Boise Regional Realtors, because they came out and they said, hey, we're committed. And they get all the realtor associations across the state to come forward and say, hey, we are making a commitment like the National Association of Realtors to do something about this. And then I reached out to, you know, the University of Idaho, law students that we work with to do some research. We get involved with our, you know, Senator Wintrow. Mm-hmm. We had a couple representatives who helped us, Matthias and Rebel. They were fantastic. The county clerks, Phil McGrain and his associates. And then luckily, welcoming the College of Idaho, Professor McKay and Vice President Latonya Keith. I can't tell, you know, how much they were so supportive of our work that we were doing to get community members who just called us. And I said, hey, if you want to join us and do something to get this language removed, let's get it done. And so combined with the research that our group did and the research that Senator Wintrow was able to obtain from her resources, we were able to put something together. And I think, you know, it's really important that people know that now they can enforce it. They can get that language removed. They were protected. I'm sure you talked about this under the Federal Fair Housing Act. But if people don't enforce it, you know, this language remains and people think that that they can't buy a house because of the color of their skin or their national origin. And so it was really important to, get rid of this systemic discrimination through this mechanism that has kept us segregated for, you know, over 100 years. So it's incredibly important and longer than that, unfortunately. And this should be easy. You know, this is something you can do now. And it was pervasive across the state. I mean, we found it in language from Blaine County all the way up to Bonner County. It was people would come forward with this language and, you know, it was like a template. You know, we know that the mm-hmm. Home Loan Corporation did this, but we didn't know how prevalent it was. And then how many law firms up until like 1973 or 74 reaffirmed this language, forgetting that the Federal Fair Housing Act was passed, you know, in 1968 that outlawed this language. Shelley versus Kramer in 1948. And before that, in 1866, the Civil Rights Act. So this should not exist. Well, now we have an easy mechanism to remove it. So it's really fortunate that such a great group of people came forward to help us.
So, Zoanne, can we have not yet touched on the Fair Housing Act and that this language was negated, basically, when the Fair Housing Act came into play. But with that said, can you explain to our listeners what that means? I mean, even though the language was in there, even this constituent Ed who contacted Senator Wintrow, that language was in a home he was buying just in the last, 18 months in the Warm Springs Mesa neighborhood of Boise. So you could not enforce that. However, the language was still there. And as you mentioned, though, this was being enforced here locally up into the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, shockingly, people did not know. They did not know, either they didn't read. You know, you get a lot of paperwork when you, sign your deed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get so much paperwork.
So much.
Either they didn't see it, or if they did see it, they were like, they didn't ignore it, or sometimes they ignored it, or sometimes they just didn't buy the home because they didn't understand that they have rights under the Federal Fair Housing Act to have it, you know, removed or have it enforced. And so, I think the shocking thing was that people didn't know they could do something about it. Also, if they're a member of a homeowners association and they try to remove it, it's really arduous to try to get it removed. And so, they have to have a pretty sizable majority. Everybody has to attend. They can do some things like pass a resolution to agree to modify it and not enforce it. But unless everybody shows up to the meeting, they just can't get it enforced. So they really needed some help. So Boise Regional Realtors, created a fund to help them delete the language, to help pay for legal costs. Well, we wanted people to have an easier time to remove it. Mm-hmm. Because it was illegal and title companies would strike it. But nevertheless, I think the concern is, from realtors and from homeowners, no one wants to violate the Fair Housing Act, but also no one wants to feel like they're not welcomed in a neighborhood or that they can't buy a home because this language literally, I want to say privately, was enforced. That's why mm-hmm. people didn't remove it. That's why realtors steered people from those neighborhoods that had this language to neighborhoods where they didn't have this language. And in the neighborhoods where a lot of the language occurs, you know, they're pretty wealthy neighborhoods or have been gentrified. So they are pretty, you know, they're pretty, you know, predominantly white, predominantly wealthy. And so that is the enforcement of systemic racism. And I think that's why it's really important that the work that Senator Wintrow did with our group and the realtors did, because they're trying to undo this practice that, you know, so many participated in the housing industry, in the lending industry, in the insurance underwriting. Even though it was illegal, they still found ways to privately enforce it through lending mechanisms, through steering and segregation by, you know, realtors, lenders, insurers. And, you know, remarkably, as Professor Cunningham probably stated, they didn't keep data on this in smaller communities. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when private lenders were doing this, they made no record. They may have a private record of it, but it's not a public document. So we're going to have to work really hard to obtain those documents. And some of that can be done from modern redlining. Where is it occurring now? Like Professor Cunningham and his students are doing right now with the, you know, the Idaho Brokers Council and some of the other groups. Like, where is it now through private lending, through, you know, healthcare data, through the fair housing plans of the cities? They're doing some modern mapping of where segregation exists. And I predict there will be some overlap where these, you know, where we have this this redlining going on from these discriminatory deeds in CC&R. So we'll see if that pans out. We make some predictions and see what happens. But so no one would know about this but for, you know, seeing it, right? Or looking at it and coming to us or, you know, one of our colleagues and going, what is this? You know,
yeah.
And the title companies, I will say, probably were the best at saying, no, this is illegal. We will delete it and it is not enforceable. But otherwise, people just, you know, turned and pretended, you know, that it wasn't there. Right. And that really, I can't say how many people lost a home or felt like they couldn't buy a home, but I imagine it's sizable based on the number of calls that we got.
And Senator, I think that Zoen made such a good point that, you know, people who maybe didn't purchase a home, people who, you know, were appalled by the language. And this goes back to this, you know, the concept of systemic racism, right? That as a white person, I was shocked and appalled that there were these covenants still in place. I cannot imagine being a person of color and the trauma seeing that type of language in this day and age would cause. So with that said, what was it like for you when you did this bill didn't just pass, but as I mentioned, it passed unanimously, which doesn't always happen in our legislature.
Yeah, you know, I'm very pleased that it passed unanimously because it says this state legislature acknowledges that there is racism and that it exists in systems and not just an individual act of meanness. It acknowledges that this was a practice that we incorporated into law to deny people. And so I think that's really important because so many folks kind of have just that misinformation about, you know, if I don't actually say a bad word, do a bad thing, discriminate actively myself, then I'm not a part of this. But, you know, when you have a system like this, you just merely need to participate to either gain an advantage or be disadvantaged. And so again, you know, this shines a light on this practice. I mean, we shouldn't have to, right? We should just know and understand that this is wrong. But to hear Zoen talk about, you know, decades of folks who just got around it, didn't abide by the Fair Housing Act and so forth, that's upsetting to say the least. So I think it's important that a government said, this is wrong and we need to address it. And I hope that this government would go farther and really examine other ways this is being incorporated and being harmful, not just in housing, but other ways. And so I hope that opens a door to all of us to understand what is our responsibility in understanding and acting in ways that are fair and inclusive, right? Everybody deserves the opportunity to succeed. And again, this doesn't erase all that. In fact, we have lingering effects that are very detrimental. But as one of I read McKay's students said, you know, when you have these myths out here, you start to attach it to people, and then that creates more harm, as if, you know, people of color are living in poverty because of their race, and that they're mm-hmm. acting badly because of the race, right? So I think, I hope it clears some of that up. And I do want to say before we go off the air, anybody out there listening, go look at your documents. See if you have these covenants. See if you have this language. You can go right down to your county clerk free of charge and file a modification document to nullify and make it void. The Boise Realtors, the regional realtors on their website, have a program called Delete Discrimination Grant Program. So HOAs can actually address this collectively. So the action I want everybody to take, look at your documents, go to your county clerk's office free of charge, make these amendments. And anyone out there in an HOA, go ask your, go look at your covenants and see if they're there, and apply for one of these grants with the Boise Regional Realtors and see if you can get that addressed.
And we should note that there is a form as just an individual property owner that, as the senator said, you can go to your county clerk's office, you fill that out, you will void that language. And we should also say that as of July 1st of this year, because of this new law, that language can no longer be put into any new property documents. Before we go off the air, Professor, I want to end with you, because it is when we see, I think, the project that you and your students have done and the work that you are doing, you know, it's brought to light systemic racism, I mean, and the practices, right? And this is the idea that the system is broken and it needs to be fixed. So what is next for your students with this project?
Yeah, what is next? I have to say that my students have been so excited and so engaged in this project. And as an educator, that's not always the case. Sometimes you have to motivate them through other ways. This project has been so fun for me, in that I've just given them a little bit of room and they have run. I mean, they are leading the project, not me. So that's just been really exciting. They recognize the nature of systemic racism, and they recognize, as Senator Wintrow has suggested, that if you do not have this kind of knowledge about redlining, this kind of understanding about racial covenants, then false narratives can seep in. You can see people of color in a dilapidated neighborhood, and the false narrative can seep in and say, oh, it's because they don't work hard, or they didn't get a good education, or they're not trying hard enough. Without that kind of educational piece and understanding of the systemic racism that we have all been growing up in, those false narratives can come through. But when you ask what's next, our students, we've been through four counties, identifying all the racial covenants in those four counties. And after we finish looking for all the racial covenants throughout the state of Idaho, we are going to publish an interactive map where Idahoans can, on their own, just type in their email address, excuse me, their property address, and determine whether or not their property has a race covenant. And then we'll have a link from our interactive map to the county recorder's office, where they can fill out that modification document. And what would have taken 3 months and $15,000 in attorney's fees, we can now do in 15 minutes. And that's what really excites our students and this project.
I want to thank all of you for coming on the program and talking about this. Such important conversations to be having. So thank you to Idaho Senator Melissa Wintrow, College of Idaho Professor McKay Cunningham, and Zoanne Olson, Director of the Idaho Fair Housing Council. Just really appreciated the conversation today.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you.